Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 43. Today we ask, are grains good for anything? Will mental effort increase your appetite? And have you ever seen the movie Predator? Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 43. I'm Relentless Roger here with Dr. Colin Champ, the Caveman Doctor. What's up, man?
I just got back from a bachelor party this weekend. I got back yesterday, which we'll discuss more, but it was eventful. It was a good time. Really good buddy of mine. Obviously not quite the lifestyle that I generally prefer on a daily basis, but we did watch Pumping Iron. We watched Predator, a bunch of old Arnold movies, so.
Predator, underrated movie.
Pretty ridiculous. I mean, even the lineup, you know, you got Jesse the Mind. It was just awesome. Good time, good reminiscing. And then we were out at a bar, and randomly there was a bar along the wall at about seven feet high. So, of course, like, we all started having pull-up contests. So then we're trying to see if we could do a one-arm pull-up, and I could do a one-arm pull-up, and no one else could. So the very end, I did a one-arm pull-up. So then today, at the end of the gym, I was just so pumped up from watching those movies that I tried to do, see how many one-arm pull-ups I could do. So I did two with each of my arms, and I can't, like, I've damaged my arm so terribly. I think we spoke about that last week about, like, oh yeah, rhabdo and, it's like all about getting pumped up for a good workout, but then sometimes you can just go a little overboard.
Push it over the line, and then your arms are useless.
Yeah, I tried to massage with a lacrosse ball, and it is just killing me. That's what I get. Anyway.
Hey, man, at least you can say today that you got one-armed pull-ups in.
Yeah, fair enough. It was worth it. I can never lift this arm again. What's up with you?
It's a week, man. First week of the transformation, that's always good. Last week was kind of preparing for it, and now it's off and running, so that's great stuff. And as I'll talk about a little later, some of our consistent listeners from way back when may remember me talking about a Top Dog challenge that we had at Relentless Fitness. I'm going to save that for my exercise takeaway portion, but we will talk about that later.
All right.
Shall we kick things off?
Let's do it. Why don't you start us off?
All right, so every now and again, popular foods and beverages sneak into the news. Coffee's a popular one that we talk about every now and again. Obviously, red meat and eggs are always in the news. And I caught an article. It was forwarded to me from a couple different places, but from Wellness FX, and it was all about chocolate. And it was titled, "Are You Eating Chocolate? You Should Be." And it went through the potential benefits of chocolate. And I thought it was a good time just to bring it back up on this podcast and discuss it, because it was something that we've written about and I think that we both enjoy to some level.
Yeah.
And so the article, just to give you a brief, you know, it's not bringing any new studies to the table. It brings a 2011 Harvard study to the table that comes down in favor of chocolate. So it's not groundbreaking news, but it's talking about the flavonoids in chocolate and the fact that they're bringing beneficial properties to the table. It quotes the Harvard study. It makes the case for dark chocolate over white chocolate and obviously milk chocolate. And then it makes the case for getting it as dark as possible and watching out how it's prepared, because certain methods of preparation can reduce certain flavonoids by more than 80%. So I thought we would just bat the topic back and forth a little bit. How is your chocolate consumption these days?
I usually do a little bit per day. I'll do a little bit per day, several days in a row, and then I won't have it for a week or so. And this is 85 plus. I try to get 90 or 95, which gets difficult. When we were down in Florida, we got a bunch of 95, right?
We got a bunch of 99.
99, right.
That was the Lint 99.
Oh, but there was also, I think there was 95 as well, which is pretty hard to find.
Yep.
So I think anything 85% or more is great. Sugars, as low as possible. Like, you know, definitely try to keep those below 10 grams. This is per serving. And then, you know, fat and fibers as high as possible per serving. And then, I don't know, preparations, that's a tough one. I mean, I know I avoid ones with soy lecithin. and, you know, try to keep it organic, etc. But
I think that's basically all you can do.
Yeah, I mean, the only other one that I can physically tell the difference but from how they prepared it is it Tazza, the one?
Yeah.
They had it inside. Yeah. I mean, this stuff, it's from, I think, Somerville, Massachusetts, right next to Cambridge.
And that's the one that actually keeps small pieces, little flecks of cocoa in there.
Yeah.
And that gives it a whole different texture. So it's not what you would, what you'd picture as a block of chocolate. If you bite into it, it has those little, trying to think of how best. It's almost like grains. It's almost like grains of something.
Yeah. It's literally like coffee grinds, yeah. But coffee bean or cocoa bean grinds. Yeah. And it is delicious.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
They don't have it at Whole Foods here.
No, they don't. That's unfortunate because it's a pretty good Whole Foods on the whole.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think I go through it about the same as you. I get in a little mini chocolate kick, and two or three nights in a row, I usually have two blocks of dark chocolate. I'm 85%+ as well. And then I'll forget about it for a little while and then come back to it for a few nights in a row. So yeah, that's how I roll with chocolate too.
I do it usually prior to or right after a workout.
Mm-hmm.
Or every once in a while, if I know I'm going to have just a terrible day at work, I'll bring two squares in. Little treat at lunchtime.
Nice. See, on the opposite, I guess I usually go for the after dinner.
I see. Yeah.
You know, as just a, like a little something then.
All right.
No. I feel like when you keep it to reasonable amount, 85%+, you know, dark chocolate from a respectable brand, I think that you're not doing,
yeah,
you're not doing yourself any harm no matter when you're having it.
Absolutely.
I guess some people, I haven't really noticed it too much, but some people claim to be impacted pretty heavily by the caffeine content of dark chocolate. And I'm pretty sensitive to caffeine, but it doesn't really mess with me too bad.
Yeah, I notice nothing.
Yeah, so. But I have read comments here and there that have people saying that chocolate gives them a small caffeine buzz. So if it does for you, you may not want to have it right before bed.
Yeah, no effect there for me.
Moving right along, what do you have, man?
All right, this is a website that was sent to me called sugarstacks.com. And interesting in theory, maybe slightly different in practice, but it's basically a very simple website, and they have all these different foods, and then they put a number of sugar cubes in front of it, and that's basically the number of sugar cubes you're eating from eating the foods. So I look through, and it's, you know, very interesting. You see Coke, and there's a pyramid of sugar cubes because that's how much dissolved sugar is in it. And they have all these other products. And then you get to the Cheerios. And guess how many blocks of sugar in front of Cheerios?
Not many.
There's just one. Because all, you know, quote-unquote sugars, all sugars Cheerios have is 1 gram. So, and, you know, this is that same message where there's no sugar in it, so you could eat as much as you want. You know, the only issue is, of course, it's digested exactly like sugar. So it may not actually be sugar when you look at it or put it in your hand or taste it, but when you digest it, sure as heck is the same thing as sugar. And this just got me. This is one of these things that always gets me kind of rolling here.
This is where we should have video. So, see your incensed face right now.
Yeah, and it really made me think back about what we discussed. I think it was maybe two weeks ago, the argument I had with a nutritionist. And it's always the same argument. You know, we were talking about fiber, we're talking about refined grains, white grains versus whole grains or wheat, and the study where there was no difference. You had another study talking about different foods that are fermented differently in the bowel. And we kind of went through there. And so I kind of wanted to run through what I call the 4 levels of defense that come up from nutritionists. And I thought about this when I was walking back from the gym. And the first one was fat's bad for you, so you just shouldn't eat fat. And that's kind of what led to a lot of sugar consumption in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and it's continuing to this day. And then the next one was, you know, fat bad, so low fat good, but sugar's probably not so good. And then that led people to eat white bread, pastas, etc. And that's where I think a lot of people stand at this point. I think there's still definitely people that are recommending, you know, pasta, white bread, etc.
Maybe a little less and less.
Less, yeah. Definitely less.
Yeah.
I think that's the changer. That's where most people are at. That's their kind of threshold where they say, ah. So then the next thing that comes is, you know, pasta is as bad as sugar. So then we kind of just say you should eat wheat bread or wheat pasta or even whole grains, which we'll get in. I don't even know what whole grains are anymore. We'll get into that. And then as the studies come out, and this is where I think most people generally are.
I agree.
But then there's studies that come out like the one we discussed several weeks ago where there's actually no difference on insulin, no difference on lipid panels, no difference on inflammation. And it's like, oh, maybe actually these aren't very good. And that's kind of the leap. That's where you hit this enlightenment period where you're like, huh, everything I've been told is pretty much wrong. And I think most people haven't made that leap yet. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree. I that's exactly what I would say. I think most people, not all, I think it's encouraging, at least in a big city. See, that's the thing. I think we live in a big city. And I think that more people here versus somewhere else, what I'm trying to say is there's a better chance someone is enlightened in a big city.
Yeah, there's more stuff that's going around.
There's more stuff circulating. And you, like, I've been pleasantly surprised, for example, in terms of people coming into the doors at Relentless Fitness.
Yeah.
Definitively this year, or the last calendar year, versus, let's say, when Relentless Fitness opened its doors 3 years ago, it's a big difference. 3 years ago, when I was mentioning the word paleo or describing the fundamentals of paleo, smart paleo approach, it was like I had two heads.
Yeah.
Now, people have heard of it. Most people have heard of it. Some people have even, you know, dug into it a little bit. I'd say where we are now, at least again, from a big city of Philadelphia perspective, I think a lot of people have heard of it, but don't have a clear definition of it, that they're associating it with that popular, you know, caveman image and thinking about meat, lots and lots of meat, that kind, you know, that kind of a media bias definition.
Yeah, I wonder percentage-wise how different. I mean, we see more because there's so many people that we see every day. I wonder, you know, like when I go to Pittsburgh in 2 months, what the percentage-wise will be.
Right.
Hopefully there will be some.
Well, I think as you gravitate away, like the smaller the city, and then eventually when you get out of metropolitan areas, I think that the percentage who knows about it goes down drastically. Yeah. That's I don't have any data to support that. That's a gut.
Well, that's perfect because the same people that recommend these fiber and whole grains have very little data. And we're going to get into that. But and you know, we've discussed this in the past. First off, they recommend wheat bread, which there's no difference between wheat and white bread. We've discussed that. I mean, there's really no difference overall in the grand scheme of things. And the other thing they push is whole grains, which I don't really know what whole grains are. Like oatmeal, oats that you eat are not whole grains. These are rolled, refined, processed things. And I forget who discussed it, Ancestral Health, when they showed the nutritional value of these foods and grains. Still, their vitamin content's very low, and then they have to be processed to be
Matt Lalonde,
yeah, to be digested. So at that point, the nutrient value is pretty much null. So you're once again eating these empty nutrient foods that affect your insulin level and make you hungry. So we're back to that sugar.
That was a pretty impactful takeaway from that speech, right? Showing you that the raw grain varieties do score very, very well on nutritional content. But then you realize you can't consume them in that state.
Yeah, you can't.
And all of a sudden, like you said, when they are cooked, they drop way down.
Yeah. If you eat whole grains, you will lose weight because they're coming right out the other end, undigested. Then the other thing they still push is that fiber, if there's fiber in the carbohydrates you're eating, the insulin spike will be less high. The glucose spike will be less high. And that, you know, that's likely true. But if you weren't eating the terrible carbohydrates, or like, just take out the bad guy and then you don't have to worry about that. So it's just, it's this cognitive dissonance in the medical world and it drives me crazy. So then I wanted to kind of piggyback on this and discuss several other things. This is an article, we'll post this. And this is from the Weston A. Price organization. And they kind of list through, it's a very long article and it's on digestion. It's just on digestion as a whole of different sources of foods, of carbohydrates, of proteins, of fats, etc. The way, different areas of the body, the physiology. And then it's very interesting because they discuss how many modern foods such as processed milk products, breads, and soy foods are extremely difficult to digest. but traditional preparation methods may make these foods more easy to digest. And basically, at this point, you can facilitate more assimilation of nutrients. So they're kind of saying the exact opposite. Like, these foods are very hard to digest, so here's how to make them more digestible. Whereas nutritionists often nowadays say, oh, that's fiber, so this is good. It'll make you go to the bathroom. It'll give you a laxative effect, which if you eat healthy foods, you don't actually need. And once again, if you look through this list, they say to soak foods, let them ferment, and fermentation even of tubers, cooking foods, cooking vegetables, using broths, etc. And this goes back to what you discussed. A lot of these foods, you're really getting this fiber in to let it ferment in your colon. Because this is another great point that I forget where I read this, but keeping in mind, and you know, most physicians were taught this, but they somehow forget, these foods that you can't digest, you're not getting any nutrient value from them. The bacteria in your colon is digesting them, which is fine because those bacteria serve a purpose. But at that point, you don't get much nutrient value in your colon. That just pulls in water. The front part, your small intestine above, you know, your where your stomach hits a food, then your duodenum, your jejunum, your ileum, that's where you digest food. So if these grains and whatnot are passed there in your colon where they're getting fermented, you're not getting any nutrient value from them. I mean, we already know you're not because they're processed, but you're definitely not because they're sitting in your colon. So when they say, oh, it gives you these nutrient values or nutrient-dense foods, etc., they're just dead wrong. So it is feeding your colon, and that's why you want more fermentable foods. And, you know, as you discussed back in the day. So there's really not a lot of benefit coming in here for grains, because the fiber thing's null and void, because there's definitely much better fermentable foods that could feed your colon, and you're getting no nutrient value from it. Secondly, do you want a lot of rough, undigested foods rolling along your bowel, scraping along the surface of your bowel? I can't think that's healthy for you, because nothing, just like in your arteries, if calcium's banging around or there's inflammatory mediators banging around there, it's not healthy. So to have something cause trauma along your intestine, I don't know. It's hard to find that healthy. So sorry, I'm doing a lot of talking here. But on to the last post, and this is the most interesting. It's called The Roar of Wolverine, and it's this guy that has this blog. It's an extremely interesting blog, and it's called Rantings of an Intestinal Transplant Survivor. So this guy had a colostomy. Mm-hmm. Colostomy is when, for whatever reason, it could be temporary or permanent, there's some bowel dysfunction. So basically, your small bowel comes out of an ostomy in the side of your stomach, and it collects in a bag. So you don't make stool, and then, you know, the normal way, your food kind of comes out there. And he had a colostomy bag pretty high up. It was it was a jejunostomy. So you have your stomach, you have your duodenum, and that goes into the jejunum. And past there, you have ileum. So this was pretty high up. And he talks about basically the different foods he was eating and what they would come out looking like. And he says, oh, when he ate fatty meats, they always came out liquid. So, you know, you always think, like, you have to eat these fibrous foods because if you eat fat or meat, it's not digested and it's going to clog up your colon and rot in there. And I've specifically heard people say meat will rot in your colon, etc. Well, he's saying very short distance down my small bowel, meat is totally digested and turned into, and fat is totally digested and turned into liquid, which makes sense because we've been eating this food for several million years. Then he says corn, broccoli, many other vegetables, however, come out looking the same way they went in. So it's interesting, you know, that our bodies are clearly primed to process and digest certain foods. So the fiber talk in terms of a constipation thing really doesn't make much sense if you're eating a lot of foods that our bodies can easily digest. So I just did a whole bunch of talking, so.
I'm just nodding, man. You know, hey.
It's just, it's so interesting as I just went through this in my head, and in physicians and nutritionists, et cetera, they've learned this, but there's just this dissonance where you don't make the connections. Like, oh, fiber, these whole grains are so great for you because they're so nutritious. Well, that's actually, none of that nutrients gets digested because it's in your colon. Yeah, but they're fiber. Actually, there's much better sources of fiber. There's just like these, and when you're taught one thing for so long, that's what you do. You just keep coming up with the defense mechanism. Like, oh no, but it's good because of this. Oh no, but it's good because of this.
You know, that's what I always say. That's what I said in the action plan book was that, you know, best case, grains break even as a neutral food. Best case.
If you prepare,
that's what I'm saying. Like absolute best case, if you're preparing them well, soaking or fermenting, you know, bringing them up to speed like that. Best case in the world, they become a neutral food, right?
Yeah.
Then you have all these other foods that we talk about all the time that are inherently at least neutral, if not significantly positive.
Yeah.
I personally know, and I personally back this up with my lifestyle choices, I personally know on which side of that spectrum I want to fall.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what it comes down to.
Exactly. It's so amazing how this continues to get passed around. But that is my... I'll get off the soapbox.
It was a good rant.
Thank you. We will post all these. It's very interesting. This guy's site's great too, Roar of Wolverine. He obviously thinks very similar to a paleo-type lifestyle. I don't know whether he says that outright in there or not, but cool stuff here. I'll post it all. Check it out.
Is he referring to the animal or the comic book character?
They called him the Wolverine. He went through some crazy medical stuff. I didn't even see the extent of it. And he said his doctors and nurses started calling him that. This guy went through crazy stuff. I mean, he was on TPN, which is basically when they're feeding you through an IV.
Wow.
And that's how this all kind of accumulated. They give high carbohydrate, high sugar foods that they inject basically straight into your veins, and he had all these infections from it. And then I think things started to click for the guy. I haven't read the site from cover to cover, but very cool stuff.
Nice. Check it out.
Check it out.
Show notes.
Exactly. So I'll pass, after my long rant, I'll pass the mic back to you here.
All right, man. So this was posted about a week ago on Pediatric Obesity. The title goes, Exercise and Negative Energy Balance in Males Who Perform Mental Work. So it's a smaller study, but nevertheless, it raises an interesting question. Okay, so they took 12 male students, normal weight, all young, so all between 15 and 20 years old. School age, high school and college, and that will come into play here. So I only have the abstract, unfortunately. We will link it and try to get the full version. But from what I can gather, they tested randomized order of three different types of sessions. And the first order was relaxation, followed by hard mental work, followed by a meal. So they call that without pause. In other words, they're looking at where the mental work is positioned where the mental work is positioned relative to the meal. Okay. So because the meal is right after the mental work in this instance, they call that without pause. Okay.
Okay.
The next one's relaxation pause. So they do the work, then they relax, and then they have a meal. And the last one's an exercise pause. So they do the mental work, they exercise, and then they have a meal. And they measure energy expenditure, energy intake, and appetite-related sensations. So how hungry someone is.
Okay.
All right. What they found is that after intense mental work, perception of appetite increases significantly. All right. What they also found was that if you exercise right after intense mental work, that the total energy balance will be negative. So even though the appetite-related sensations will increase, and you'll eat a little bit more after the exercise, that after all that's happened, after you do the intense mental work, you go get your workout, and then you eat, all in all, you'll have a negative energy balance. So this could be a potential weight loss tool. So I think the takeaways, again, this is just the abstract. I haven't dug into the full study. But the takeaways, or being that it's a small study, more of the questions that this raises, right?
Yeah.
Number one, intense mental work seems to increase appetite. I think that makes sense. I mean, that jives with what I've experienced before. I think if I am sitting at a desk cranking away on some mental problem or writing some pages, I tend to get a little hungry after that.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So that's number one. And then number two, if that's the case, and you are in a position where you are performing intense mental work, if you can set up exercise immediately following that, before you sit down for a meal or a significant snack or anything of the sort, that could actually help you more in the long term. So I think that's super interesting for any, high school, college students, grad school students out there, or people just that in their everyday jobs, they are constantly cranking away mentally. If you can position a rock solid workout, let's say right after you leave work, right after you leave a block of classes, and then go have a meal, sounds like that could be a good strategy.
Yeah, I know there's another article too, which I'll have to bring up, where they looked at activities after mental stimulation, et cetera, and to see how you perform better on those mental tasks. And same thing, exercising afterwards makes you better. You can remember things better. People tested better.
Great.
So, yeah. Are we ready?
Takeaways? Kick us off.
All right. So this weekend, I came back just in with workouts in a fury, just so much enthusiasm. It just really made me think about how important it is to combine your workouts with kind of healthy and happy thoughts and experiences. You know, not dreading going to the workout, but after work, but using motivation from the past. You know, obviously these movies, etc., these kind of good times. These movies made me think about working out back in the day with my friends. And it is amazing how much it made me want to just get back into the gym and push my workouts to the next level. And I think really working to cause those associations within your brain for going to the gym and just kind of positive, good feelings can really help you get through, hopefully through the harder times where you are less motivated in the gym.
Couldn't agree more, man.
We're in a lot of agreement today.
The phrase I always loved that my buddy passed along to me was, you know, I get to. I don't have to, I get to.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really key mental distinction because, you know, I can guarantee a lot of people who are listening to this podcast, as well as me and likely you at one point or another, have gone into a gym and thought, oh man, you know, I have to work out today. And it becomes drudgery. It becomes such a mentally exhaustive, physically exhaustive task as well. But I mean, if you kind of reframe it, take a step back and think about why you're there and what you're hoping to achieve, it all starts to fall into place. Yeah. You know, it's like, you don't have to be there. You can go home. You know, you don't have to walk into the gym. But when you start to align it with your long-term goals, which is that you want to be, you know, you probably want to look good. You want to improve your health. Maybe you have some specific performance-related tasks, you know, and then it all starts to click. It's like, okay, well, I could go home, but maybe I don't want to go home.
Even just, you know, having friends at the gym that you want to see. And that's where CrossFit is so effective for people. It just creates that camaraderie.
Absolutely.
What do you got?
So this is where I want to bring back up the Top Dog Challenge. And, you know, I think every now and again, I like to remind people, and I'm a big advocate of, you know, efficiently and effectively exercising. I don't believe too much in the beat the body up for the sake of beating the body up type mentality. However, I do also respect a challenge. And I think that it's very useful to challenge yourself periodically in ways that you're not necessarily used to being challenged. So we do, our version of that at Relentless is called the Top Dog Challenge. And we unveiled it last year and we invited 15 of our fittest clients to compete in something that they knew nothing about. You know, obviously exercises that were well within their range. It wasn't stuff that they necessarily had to learn that night, but it was constructed and put together in ways that they didn't expect. And it was a lot of fun. So a lot of fun. We gave away a championship belt and some prizes and it was a blast. So this is the second iteration of that where the belt holder has a chance to defend and another wave of challengers has a chance to step up and try to take it from her. And it's pretty neat. It's we correct for gender, so there's no, you know, everyone's competing on a level playing field and it's a ton of fun. We all go out afterwards and it's, speaking of camaraderie and social situations, it's a really nice time. So what I'm trying to say is my takeaway is to put yourself occasionally in unexpected, slightly uncomfortable situations that really push you and stretch you and force you to look at things in a little bit of a different way. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very, very useful experience.
Nice. Yeah. It's all about motivation.
All about motivation. And again, it could be something as simple as, I know we're not huge running advocates, but a 5K, you know, is not going to hurt you. And maybe that's all you have locally. And that's, you know, sort of the best you have at your disposal. And you go out and run a 5K and look around and see lots of, you know, fit people doing the very same thing. That can be a very useful thing. Maybe you're in a big city. Maybe you have a lot of stuff at your disposal. You could do one of these alternative races. You could, create something yourself. You could, create a challenge for your friends. I know Marissa and I, 1 year, I think it was 2 years ago or so, we went over to her family's house and we created a fitness challenge that at first received snickers, like, oh, really? These two trainers are really going to have our entire family do a fitness challenge. But honestly, we got about 12 of her family members and cousins and everyone to partake. And everyone got such a kick out of it by the end. and felt great and were fired up. And so
it's awesome.
It really went well. So you, I mean, you too, wherever you stand, can do that with your own family, with your own friend base. It doesn't take much.
Great.
All right, man.
All right, diet. I will be quick here. You know, it was interesting taking a look back at this weekend. It was definitely one where the wheels could come off. And in some, in a small, a couple aspects they did. But interestingly enough, in the major with my food or whatnot, I kind of kept it as it should be. I kept it pretty tight. And, so when Sunday hit and we drove back, I went right back into my routine with no issues. So my big takeaway here is, if there is something coming up, a holiday, what's coming up? Labor Day? Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
Memorial Day, 4th of July, etc. If you slip up, it's fine, but keep everything else in check, and it's really not a, it's nothing more than a blip. But you take the wheel, you know, the wheels fall off and you go nuts for several day period. It's a lot harder to get back on, and there's a lot more death and destruction to your body.
No doubt about it.
So it's just, it's nice to take a look back and see how that turned out.
Yep.
What do you got?
All right. So examine.com, I've been seeing this online a bunch. Different people have been shouting it out. So I figured we should talk about it. This site, examine.com, put out something entitled, "We've Solved 90% of Supplement Confusion, Introducing the Human Effect Matrix." So it looks like what they've been doing for years is collecting research and citations on all forms of supplements, or as many supplements as they could. They have they say over 17,000 citations in their database that all try to answer one question: what does a supplement do? I think this is super interesting, especially surrounding something that is a source of such confusion, supplementation. So if you go here, I mean, you could, depending upon how much you like to geek out on this stuff, you could spend a lot of time on the site. They have a ton of supplements, and if you click on a supplement, it will show you every citation that they have, and it will attempt to organize the citations for you and give you tangible takeaways about supplements. So they have a quick list of, you know, a couple popular ones to get you going, such as creatine, vitamin D, fish oil, etc. I highly recommend, again, if you'd like to geek out on this stuff, check it out. We'll link it in the show notes, and enjoy.
Nice. Gotta check that out. Is it that time?
Caveman Corner. What do you have?
All right, so I'm just going to stay on this bachelor party kind of rant here. So I was excited. You know, I was really excited for this weekend, and I was a little apprehensive because there's 14 of us sharing a beach house with 4 bedrooms. I knew the sleep was going to be terrible. I knew there's going to be a lot of alcohol involved. I knew there's going to be a lot of beer involved, which I'm, you know, not a huge fan of. I'm not a huge fan of alcohol in general, but especially beer. And it was a great time. And there's a lot of people there that were like-minded with me in some ways, in terms of working out, etc. Diet, probably not so many. It was great. We did watch Predator, and, you know, to me, that was probably the most fun, just hanging out with people and watching movies and just kind of shooting it and whatnot. But, it just made me realize as well how important it is to, obviously, to be well-rounded and have a good group of friends, but to also have people that are like-minded as you and it made me think about Paleo FX, where, you know, it was a very different experience. We had tons of fun, but we all got, you know, 8 hours of sleep a night. We all ate well. We all continued our workouts. I don't want to say there was no drinking, but it does make you realize how important it is to have people around you that give you positive feedback on your positive lifestyle and health changes. And not just people who are always trying to get you to drink a beer or whatnot. So it's good to have that. But granted, the beer drinking Predator game was pretty fun. So it was, anytime you saw the Predator vision, anytime Predator turned invisible, anytime Arnold's biceps were in, which was a really hard one, anytime he said...
The intro arm wrestling scene?
Yeah. I mean, every scene he's holding a machine gun, flexing his biceps. Anytime he said, "Get to the choppa," and then, any, what was the other one? Any like disemboweled body or headless body, which is actually quite a few.
It sounds like a good game to me.
It was a pretty fun game. And you know, it's fine. It's harmless, et cetera, especially if you keep tight on other dietary aspects. But, it was a lot of fun, and I'm so glad I'm friends with those guys, but I'm also so glad, you know, I'm friends with people like you, Roger.
Oh, thanks.
but friends with, you know, people that have similar mindset and that give me a lot of positive feedback and really promote these healthy behaviors. And the guys I hung out this weekend obviously promote the workouts and whatnot. I came back just roaring to go.
Yep.
So it's great to have people like that in your life and great to surround yourself with those kind of people.
And you're right, man. I mean, something like Paleo FX was tons of fun, you know? The one we had a chance to obviously go out to a lot of fun dinners. There was a farm dinner, but even we stayed in a house with several other people, and you know, just the night we were able to cook at home, bring out some good wine, sit outside, chat, and then of course everyone, like you were saying earlier, everyone wanted to go to sleep early.
Yeah,
you know, that was just how it was, and we still had our fun and enjoyed it, but still, like you said, got that sleep in.
Yep. All right, what do you got?
Speaking of sleep, so I'll share my story of the weekend spilling into today. So coming into today, I was a little tired from the weekend. Oh, by the way, I did have a cup of real coffee over the weekend for the first time in a long time, and it was like a drug. I was absolutely bouncing off the walls. And of course, when you're regularly drinking coffee, it does not feel like that at all. So that was an interesting thing. But I felt good. I was relaxing one morning and wanted a cup and had it. And then, of course, I was just lit on fire.
Off the walls.
So that's not what I want to talk about. Coming into today, I was a little bit tired. And I arrived at... So my goal was go to the gym, work the morning. I wrap up around 11, 11:30 noon, right in that range. And I said, all right, I have to get my workout in right away, because I'm not going to feel like doing it later, okay? Well, there was some schedule changes surrounding a class at the gym, and the class was actually a little earlier, so I didn't have any time, right? I finished my last responsibility at the studio, and the class was already in full swing, and I didn't really have any space to do what I wanted to do. So I ended up leaving, all right? So I get home, and lo and behold, exactly what I thought was going to happen happens. I don't feel like doing anything. I had my lunch, and then honestly, I felt like taking a nap. So then I was met with this decision, and it caused me to think about all the days when people all over the place face a similar decision. And the decision was, do I take a nap or do I force in this workout that I wanted to get in? Right? And it was this really speculative moment where initially I decided to take the nap, right? I decided, hey, I'm not going to get a really productive workout in anyway. And I decided to lay down, and about 10 minutes into laying down, I got really frustrated and just ended up springing out and getting this great workout in, like totally out of the blue. And I just thought of, you know, all the times that I've been in similar situations, and I think progressively over the years, I get to know myself better, and I get to know when I'm BSing myself and when I'm not BSing myself. There are days when you absolutely need that nap, and working out is not the right move and will put you in a bigger hole. There are absolutely those times. There are also those times where you were BSing yourself. And that's truly what I was doing. You know, I wasn't that tired. And in actuality, I know right now recording this podcast with you at night, I feel a lot better for having done that workout than I would have if I had just gotten that nap.
It's like your own personal heart rate variability.
Absolutely.
Monitor.
Absolutely. And so I guess the takeaway, what I'm trying to say here is, invest the effort into getting to know yourself. And I think, you know, one of the points of resistance for not going paleo or anything like that, but just for adopting a healthy lifestyle, I think one of the points of resistance is the unwillingness to put in that mental effort, you know? And it is a hassle at times, but it gets a lot easier, you know? And I think it starts to become a very natural thing. And it starts to become really beneficial because, again, 3 years ago, I would have just taken the nap, not thought anything of it, been tired now doing the podcast, not having got my workout in, you know, and things, things tend to snowball when you approach it like that. So, again, I can't say enough how beneficial it is to put in that a little bit here and a little bit there, a mental effort, getting to know yourself and, learning how to maximize your output.
Good stuff. Episode, what was it, 43?
43.
In the books.
We are coming up on the big 5-0. It's not that far away.
It is going to be crazy.
We're going to watch Predator.
I'm going to be gone by then.
I know, man.
It's going to be we'll figure it out. Maybe it'll be July 4th. Extravaganza.
July 4th. Yeah. Is that your first week in Pittsburgh?
Yes. And I have my boards right after, so I can barely even celebrate. But
fun, fun.
Such is life. Anyway, enough from us.
All right. Check this man out on cavemandoctor.com. You can check me out on relentlessroger.com. And, of course, pick up the episode and drop a review on iTunes. We'll see you for episode 44 next time.
Have a good week, everyone.